Welcome to the Exceptional Sales Leader Podcast with Darren Mitchell. If you're a sales leader looking to take your leadership to a whole new level, then this is the podcast for you. We'll be exploring tips, techniques, and strategies to help you take your leadership to the exceptional level and allow you to enjoy more money, more meaning, and better sales results. Welcome back to the Exceptional Sales Leader Podcast, and a very special welcome to a very special man all the way from San Francisco, or the San Francisco Bay Area, Mr. Richard Harris. How are you, my friend?
I am very good and excited to be here, and jealous that, you know, you're in Australia. So, you know, because all we see is beautiful things about Australia here. So I'm going to get there one day.
Well, it is a beautiful country. It's very multicultural, lots of different beaches, lots of different, let's just say, landscapes. I would say it wouldn't have been the greatest place, particularly where I am in Melbourne, to be around COVID, but we're getting out of that, and it's a lot better now.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad you can stretch your legs a little.
Well, the benefit, I mean, where I live, I'm just north of Melbourne, so we've got 2.5 acres. So
Without delving
into too much detail, when we had the lockdowns, people were restricted in how far they could move from their house, and they had a 5-kilometer radius. And for some people, they were in apartments or flats or, you know, small block units, and they had no freedom at all. At least we could get out and roam and get some fresh air. But I don't know about though.
It was kind of the same. We found, our immediate neighbors, they have a pool and a ping pong table, and we have a trampoline and a fire pit and an outdoor TV. So we potted all together so we could go back and forth, and their kids are the same age as our kids mostly. And then we had one other family that lives around the corner. And so we were able to have some sense of normalcy and, you know, we're big, you know, basketball fans here. And so the Golden State Warriors, you know, we were outside by the fire pit all winter long and enjoying it. And, you know, we felt, considering to the point you said, we felt pretty blessed that we were healthy and yes, we were restricted, but not like a lot of people.
It's just, and it's nuts. I'm not going to talk about COVID today, but just looking back, and it's amazing that it was 4 years ago when it started.
I know.
Just the very concept, even today in 2024, for me, the concept of lockdowns, of airlines being grounded, countries being closed off, it defies
what I don't think it'll ever happen again. I really don't think people, you know, it let's rephrase that. If something like a COVID happens where there is illness but not imminent death, so to speak, I don't think the citizens of the world will allow it.
No.
In the way that it was before.
No, totally agree. Totally agree. But you know what? We're not here to talk about COVID.
No.
We're here to talk about you. And for the listeners, just a little bit of your bio. Very, very impressive bio, I must say. You are the founder of the Harris Consulting Group. I just put an S, an O-N on the end.
I get it all the time. Don't worry about it.
So I might call you Harry or Dick soon.
It's all right. Believe me, there's so many jokes. I'll even tell you, you know, it's March 14th. My birthday's April 1st. Go for it. I can take anything you got, my man.
Love it. Love it. And what I will say is we're now connected on LinkedIn, and you kind enough to send me a copy of your book, which we'll talk about. This is not by any means a promotional episode. So people listening to this, we're not here flogging books, but I will say that if you want to learn about sales, practical sales and realism, then do yourself a favor and have a look at this, because you're the first person, Richard, that I know of who has not only put out a book, but has put out a guarantee that if you download the book, you put your email in the book, my friend.
Yeah. It's the first sentence of the book. Here's my email. The end of those first intro pages, I'm like, if you don't like it, I'll Venmo your money back or PayPal, or I don't know how I'll get it to Australia, but I'll get you something. I'll have Darren buy you a beer or something. I don't know.
Absolutely. But, absolutely. Yeah,
so, and I did it 'cause I was like, there's so many books out there and there's so much noise in general. And I'm kind of known to be a little snarky, and I'm like, why not? Like, what could be better than a sales book that has a money back guarantee?
Yeah.
Like, And so it was half cheeky, definitely serious, but how do I just sort of have some fun with it?
But it also says that, and when I looked at that and I heard and I saw the video you put on LinkedIn, I'm thinking, you know what, that's pretty ballsy, but it also says it's authentic, that you truly believe in the content and the philosophies that you talk about. And if it's not for you, hey, send me it back. I'll give you your money back. No problem at all. Which is a fantastic, it's just a fantastic sales tactic, right? Because it almost takes away the excuses from the buyer that they sometimes use. So now the other thing that impressed me, you are the Salesforce sales influencer 3 times, 21, 22, 23.
Thank you. It's one of those things where it's like I kind of need to let people know because it helps with the brand, but you don't want to go around bragging about it. But it's very cool, and they've done a really good job of it. There's a bunch of us in it, and they give us opportunities to be part of Salesforce blogs and articles, and again, helps our name and our business. And but we also get to participate in a different way. They ask us to be on different, podcasts or whatever, and of course, in return, we promote it. Yeah, of course we are. Why wouldn't I? And it's a nice little feather in the cap. So, thank you for recognizing.
No, and it's a great thing because it adds to credibility, industry credibility, for you. So it's not you're not a fly by nighter, and you've been around
No,
for
not
a
at
while.
all.
You've got a long distinguished history in sales, which we'd love to delve into. And what I love about you, the first couple of pages of your book, you said, you know what? Yes, I am in sales. And we'll start by this because I want to delve into your background and what led you to do what you do. But just as a first sort of question, what's your thoughts on this? Because I come across and I work with a lot of salespeople who are almost resistant or reluctant to say, I'm in sales and I'm proud of it. So they'll say, I am the national account manager, or I'm the customer success manager, or I'm the chief revenue officer. Hey, you're in sales. Just say you're in sales. So
Well, the evolution of that is that as I was even before I wrote the book or started getting serious about writing it, I was like, oh, this is the book. This is the title of the book. Yes, I'm in sales. Nobody's talking about it that way. Nobody said it out loud, so to speak. And I checked it with like five or six people in the industry, like people I know and are really smart. And I'm like, they're like, oh, that's a good title. Really good. And then as I started to write it and I was working with my publisher, they were like, well, you could do that, Richard. We think it's this though. We should play off this compass thing that you have and the sales journey. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I asked a couple more people like what they thought. And they're like, yeah, don't get so stuck on your thought because it's your thought. And I took that advice. And so that's where it came from. But I was one, it was the sort of snarkiness in me. And then the other was like, that's the reality, right? Like you can go to a party and you meet the head of this or the head of that. And they're like, what do you do? And it's almost like we sort of mumble it under our breath,
That's right.
and it's a shame because so much of what we do really does help drive global economies, right? Like it's not like the world wouldn't exist. The world would always still exist in a different way, but there's something to it that's like, wait a minute, every piece of clothing you wear, every food you eat, somebody sold something somewhere,
That's it.
right? And so that's where that came from. I'm just sort of like, let's ground this, let's call it out. So
And I think more of us need to do that because every single person on the planet is in sales. Now,
I talk about, yes.
you might not be carrying a sales target, right? But you're in sales. So if you're married or you're with somebody, a significant other, what have you got sold, right? What have you got sold?
I go look, I go all the way back and I say, at least in America, as we go into college and we have spring break, right? At the university, it's like, how did you sell your parents to go to Mexico for spring break, right? Like that was a sales job, right?
That's it.
All those things. So I agree with you. I had to sell my parents in eighth grade that I was not going to private school. I was going to go to the public school. It's
Wow.
just, we're all in there.
We are, and it's interesting that the number of people I often go and do workshops for people who are not in sales, even though my specialty is in sales. I'll do some operational or some leadership programs, and I'll often ask the question because I always weave back into sales and the fact that you guys, even though you might be an engineer, even though you might be a marketing person or you might be a HR person, you're still in sales because you have to influence people. So I asked them the question, when you hear the word sales, what do you think? What's the first thing that comes to your mind? And what do you think they say?
Oh, I already know. They either say someone snarky, used car salesman, whole thing, right? Like that's
That's
the
it.
standard.
That's
Right?
it.
There are three professions known for lying the most. You know what they are? I bet you know them.
Well,
Think about it.
sales.
Sales is one.
Probably legal.
Yep, lawyers.
Politicians.
There it is. That's it. Those are the three most known professions known for lying. Yep. And so, but you don't hear a lawyer mumbling under their breath that they're a lawyer, even when they know the lawyer jokes are coming. You don't
That's
hear a
it.
politician mumbling it. But for some reason in sales, we think it's kind of a bad word or a dirty word. And so it's really, that's I think that's part of what I try to do too, is just I'm not necessarily trying to elevate the status of the concept of the word sales, but I just want people to feel good about what they do. Like I want to be proud of it,
Absolutely. Stand up and be proud. So, Richard, where did it all start for you then? So I know you've got a fairly lengthy and diverse background, but what because to give context, what you do today in the Harris Consulting Group, I know you work with a lot of sales organizations, you run conferences, you do your own podcast, you're now an author, etc. Where did it all start for you, and what led you down this path to what you do today?
No, I mean, I can go all the way back. First of all, I'm one of the few people in the world, in the sales world, I should say, who knew they were going to go into business and sales in particular, right? Like we know that, to a certain extent, sales is sometimes the remnants of a dumpster fire of many other failed careers, right?
I
And
just fell into it.
right, you just
I
sort of
couldn't do
fell
anything
into it.
else, so I thought, oh, I'm just
Yes.
going to do sales.
It's like you're Deadpool or something, and you come out stronger and more resilient. But for me, it really, all honesty, it was back to when I was a kid. Like my parents, my dad sold insurance, my mom sold radio advertising, and then cable advertising when that came along. And as a young kid, my parents taught a lot about finances. And like I remember owning and them teaching me that you own stock in this. In this Texaco, which is gas company, right? Gas station. And I would go, I would distinctly remember asking, well, so how much of that gas station do I own? And they're like, none. None. You own the concept of it, right? And so I was sort of been fascinated by that. Growing up, I had always wanted to be a history teacher, particularly was American history, but I knew there was no money that was going to, give me the lifestyle I wanted. But it also was like, oh, I like teaching. So I even knew, even when I went into sales, I really wanted to be in management because I enjoy helping others succeed, probably more than I like helping myself, which I can point to even now. But that's really where it started. Like it's kind of unintentionally been laid out that way. My sister, on the other hand, same exposure, same experience, and she's an artist, right? Like very, she can paint and she can draw and she does jewelry and like, so it's just that was. That's what struck with me. So,
Well, you're just an artist in a different form.
yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. So, I'll
And
take that compliment.
so, because I know in the book you talk about the fact that there is a lot of institutions now, and maybe there's some like MBAs or some programs that do have an element of sales, but there's no, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's no real sales degree. So you can't go to university to learn how to be a salesperson to the point where you get a degree of sales that you then hang up on your wall. As
You
you would know.
actually, there actually are. There's about 300 colleges in the United States,
Oh, is
maybe
it?
four,
Okay.
that now have a undergrad, like your first degree, not a master's program, of sales. And I know a couple of the professors in a couple of different schools. And it's amazing because they go in and they learn all these things that we had to learn on the fly. Like they get to learn all the CRMs. They get to learn Medic and Bant and Challenger and Neat and Gapsa, like all of them, like they get to learn all this, and you come out and it's like I remember when I was in college, the kids with accounting degrees got recruited heavily, right, by the big accounting firms, And same things happen. The sales people with those degrees, they're getting recruited 12 to 18 months ahead of time. You know, they're not going to go to Boeing and sell jet airplane engines, but they'll go start at Boeing at whatever that level is. And Boeing will want that person to go up the chain, right? Yeah. Because all that stuff that we have to cram so fast gets taught over several years. And so, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah. It's because I remember as you were talking there, I was remembering back, I used to be in telecommunications in Australia, and the two largest providers in Australia is Telecom, or Telstra, as it's now known, and then Optus, which was the second carrier, and I started at Optus. I remember back then they put in a sales cadetship. So there was a chosen few that were put through like a 12-month sales program, which wasn't so much a university degree. It was really all the sales methodologies and the CRM stuff and all that. I remember one of the guys coming out of it, and he was a great, I look back now, he was a great salesperson, but he walked around most of the day just carrying one of those leather compendiums, looking very official in his suit, not doing nothing, but looking very, very, very sharp. Until he realized that, oh, I've actually got a sales target now that I have to achieve. So I better do some work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Totally agree. And again, it's the same thing here. Like if you go to a big company, like, you know, like General Electric or Ford, you know, or, you know, they have programs, right, to do that stuff.
Yeah.
But in the world I swim in, I never wanted to work for a big corporate company. And, you know, my first sales job really in high school was at the Gap. So I did get, you know, that was a big company, but I took that job knowing it would get me other jobs.
Yeah.
But there was no sales training program in a lot of these smaller companies, right? And certainly in the startups world that I'm in the most, you know, it's that doesn't exist.
Yeah. Because in that area, I guess that industry, you've got a lot of founders and people who are great. They've created a product, they've created a service, and it's their baby. And they just naturally, based on the passion they have for it, go out and sell. But then when they start to get bigger, they don't necessarily, they've got to now work on different parts of the business in order for that to scale and to grow.
Yeah.
So you need to have a sales sort of approach that's regimented, but it's also consistent to enable that to grow.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's a big challenge with founder-led sales that they kind of forget, or they don't realize that, first of all, their first set of customers are coming from referral.
Yeah.
So there's a trust built in. And those first set of customers are trusting the fact that it's the founder, so that if something happens, they're going to talk to the founder.
Yeah.
Right. And that the founder can speak in an intimate, detailed way, different than a salesperson. Not that that salesperson couldn't learn that, but it's just different.
Yeah.
And founders just overlook that. And then they think, you know, oh, it can be learned overnight and done overnight. Why can't they do it? Like, you know, and they have no concept that, look, it takes 2 years. Like, just, I don't, you know, and you're not smart enough to think it's going to take you less.
Yeah.
Don't tell me. Like, you know, there's enough data out there, right? Short of you becoming, you know, TikTok or whatever. But even then, there was several years before they were really going to business, right? But that's a different business model, right? Like, that's a B2C play, not a B2B play.
Yeah. And so with organizations today, there has to be almost like a bit of patience. Yes, you want to drive results. Mm-hmm. Yes, you want to actually scale and build profitability. Mm-hmm. And yes, your sales targets are always going to increase. But with that, there also has to be a level of patience as well.
I see that a lot as, you know, even if a product or service can be sold horizontally to 10 industries, when you're starting, you only start with three, right? You cannot boil the ocean.
Yeah.
Right. It is impossible, even though your solution could do that. And the challenge is that they're different industries, they're different personas, there's different personalities, there's different pains and thresholds of when this is going to be needed. And every time you go to a new vertical, first question they're going to ask you is, who else have you sold to in my vertical?
Yeah.
Like every time. And so, you know, it's teaching people to go deep, not wide.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, the most successful companies I see, They pick 3 to 4 verticals. They get very good at it. They go dominate in those verticals. And interestingly enough, the other verticals almost find them as much as they go into the new vertical.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and I say this all the time to people too, is look, why can't you go into more than 3 or 4 verticals? Well, great. How many marketing people do you have that can write a case study when you have 7 verticals? How many marketing people can pick up the phone and talk to that customer? And usually if you're small, it's maybe one person.
Yep.
And you cannot do it. It's like, it's physically impossible. So
that's it. That's it. Because there has to be a level of credibility that's established that in that vertical, they know that the person that they're talking to has industry knowledge, credibility, track record. And if you don't, you know, there's only so much BS you can float before people realize, oh, there's not much beneath the surface. Not much beneath the surface.
Agreed.
Yeah. So with the I know one of the key concepts in the seller's journey is you talk about the seller's journey rather than the buyer's journey, and you make specific mention the fact that the buyer's journey doesn't exist. Now, what's interesting, and you've probably seen this out there, right? There's a lot of organizations now that talk about the buyer's journey. Let's get in tune
with the buyer's tell you how many SKOs I blew up this year. I'm like, oh, no, we're going to bring someone, you know, we're going to do this. I'm like, great. Just tell me you're not going to talk about the seller's journey. And they're like, what? That's our main theme. I'm like, yeah, you fucked it up. And they're like, why? And I explained that there is no such thing as a buyer's journey. There's only a buyer's experience through a journey.
Yeah.
Right. And people have unintentionally, I just think people never thought about it this way. I don't think anybody was malicious in this buyer's journey persona, you know, is that the journey they go on is what sales and marketing have created.
Yeah.
Right. Even before they go to Google and Google something, they had an experience that required them to make this search.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what I mean. There is no such thing as a buyer's journey. There's just a buyer's experience.
Yeah.
There might be an internal company journey to get the stuff figured out, right? Through the sales process, like, oh, I got to go through this part and this part and this part. Even then, those are just steps in an experience. And everybody, when we try to, you know, get things out of the way or get through the red tape, basically all we're saying is, how do I just make this an easy experience?
Yeah.
That's all we're talking about. So yeah, so I get pretty passionate about this, and it's a unique differentiator.
And so when you go to sales kickoffs and say, you guys have been talking about the buyer's journey, I'm here to tell you that it doesn't exist. Until they leave the
audience. I usually clear that ahead of time with whoever I'm working with. And I'm like, what's your concept of this? Because I don't want to blow you out of the water, because I will. And every now and then I sort of let it slip that, you know, I don't believe it, but I'm, you know, if I go speak at somebody's thing, like they're paying me to do that, like I need to be mindful and respectful. Like, you know, I'm as snarky as I am and as all those things, I got to respect the person who's writing the check. And I can still find a way to say, well, you know, if you're thinking about a buyer's journey, let's add this thing called the experience through their journey, through the buyer. So I can easily morph it, you know, but it's a fun way to call people out when I can.
Well, it is. And it almost presupposes when you hear the concept of the buyer's journey that they've started somewhere, and it's like they're going on the hero's journey, right? And at the end of the day, the seller is going to be the one with the elixir when they cross the threshold of the new world. They're like going to be the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
And it is true that buyers will be in a certain cycle of, I guess, their evolution as to when they're ready to purchase, right? There's only probably 2 or 3% at any time ready to buy now. But the experience that we create as a selling organization, as a company, but also us as an individual, will create an experience for that company and those key contacts within that company that may or may not accelerate their experience, and therefore their decision-making criteria. Yeah. So
I say it all the time that, you know, people will buy from you not just because of what you do, but how you do it.
Yeah.
Right. You know, all things being equal, even if you're a little bit more expensive than someone else, if they've had a good experience, they'll choose you. They'll feel the value difference. Right. Yeah. I run into this all the time with what I do. I assume you do too, that, you know, you're competing against somebody for something, you know, when you talk to people, and there's something about the way you do it that resonates with them that makes them choose you. Because look, you do sales leadership, you do leadership coaching. There's a lot of people out there who do it. I could do it. You know, I've got some stuff around it, but you're unique to you, and that's what they want, right? There's that, you know, in the book they talk about this too, is that there's this lack of humanity in sales. And it's that humanity piece that I think we're talking about here is like, let's just let it be, you know, and that you'll find the right business and the right business will find you.
It will, but it's interesting that there are a lot of organizations that believe their product or their service is the best.
Of
And
course.
everything they do, and look, you've got to believe in your product, right? Because if you don't believe in your product, then why are you doing it in the first place? But when it comes to things like what makes you unique, it may not necessarily be your product. And I say to sales teams all the time, if you think your customer is waking up in the morning and thinking, I have to go and find that product because that's all I'm thinking
Yes.
about, then mate, you are delusional. And yet
Right.
sales teams often think that is the case.
So I say this too. I'd be curious to what do you teach them to say when someone says, well, why should I choose you over them? Because it happens, right? I have something I think is kind of unique, but what do you say to people?
It varies. It depends on the context. What I will say is do not go into offensive mode or solution mode or product mode. I would much rather, if I was asked that sort of question, rather than respond directly to that, I'd probably look at what sort of question I could ask because I need to understand the context from which they're coming from. Are they looking for an experience? Are they looking for a certain thing of a product or a service? What is it they're looking for? And then I can tailor something to suit that rather than say, well, I choose because I have the best product from this, I've got the biggest that or the shiniest this. They're sitting there thinking, so what?
Nobody cares. Nobody
No.
cares what we do. They only care what pains we solve,
Yeah.
right? And so my version of that, and that's I use that technique too. Another one I teach people is to be able to say, hey, Darren, before I answer that question, would you like to hear what our most successful customers have said when we've asked them why they chose us?
Yeah.
And Darren's going to go, yeah, I will. Oh, well, this is why they tell us they choose us. So now I can talk about how wonderful I am, but not in my context, in their context, from
That's
another
it.
customer's point of view,
Yeah.
right? And so I say it all the time, you know, like be able to say, you know, would you like to hear like why our happiest customers choose us or why our most successful customers choose us? And what happens is what person who's reviewing Darren's business or Richard's doesn't want to be both happy and successful. Like
And
every
part of
prospect
that,
wants to be happier and success, more successful.
they do. And part of
So,
that process is you're associating that potential customer with other successful customers. They'll be part of success ecosystem, right?
And so I think combining what you said, well, you know, can you give me some context? What are you looking for? And then you know, for me, I would then flip that into, okay, well, would you like to hear what other people have said, our most successful customers have said based on what you just said? So now it's all, you know, it's hard for them to argue against those things.
It is. And sometimes, depending on how courageous you feel, it might be, you know what? Because you get me. Simple as that, right? Because at the end of the day, people will always do and continue to do business with those who they know, who they like, and who they trust, right? And if you can do that, and this is the key thing I say to salespeople and to leaders all the time, you don't have to be out there trying to convince a customer or a prospect to buy your product. Because if you do that, chances are you're going to have a lot of objections and they'll come up with reasons not to do that. Just be you, though. Just be you. You don't have to pretend to be you, but if you can be the best version of you, and by the way, if you can almost have this, and I don't think the word is flippant, and context is don't attach any meaning to having to get a perfect outcome, as in, I don't have to sell you this, right? If I believe I've got a great product that will solve a problem that you said you had that you want to solve, then I'll give you the opportunity to buy this, right? But I'm not going to sell it to you. How much do you want?
And and I tell people all the time, and I bet you do something similar of like, look, if I'm not the right fit, just tell me. Like, I don't, you know, nothing exhausts the spirit and will of a salesperson than chasing maybes. And nothing exhausts a prospect more than those checking in, reaching out, and touching base emails.
That's
So
it.
you tell me if I can't help you. And by the way, Darren, if I can't help you, I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to tell you who you should talk to.
Correct.
Right? I'm going to create the right karma. And I
Yeah.
say this because that person will come back, right? And I say this all the time too, is that, you know, our job in sales, you know, it's my belief anyway, it's our job to get people to fall in trust with us, not fall in love with us.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they can't like us. It just means I need them to trust. And if I build that point of like, well, what's the most trustworthy person? It's the person who doesn't really, you know, try to guilt me into buying something or doing something, you know? So, you know, we're cut from the same cloth, and you know, you need to come to Costa Rica for surf and sales. So.
Well, I have tried to surf a couple of times. I did actually manage to stand on the board, but it was probably only for a microsecond before I ended
I guarantee you,
up.
you'll stand up by the first day. By the end of the first day, you'll stand up. It
Love
doesn't,
it.
it's not hard.
And I'm told that the water in Costa Rica is a beautiful, beautiful temperature as well.
It's like bath water. Like, it's
Oh.
not hot bath water, but like you get out and you're not cold.
Wow.
Like, it just feels the same temperature as the air. Like, it's
That
just
is
amazing.
amazing. That is amazing. So you said something really interesting there just before, Richard, and that was our role as salespeople is to get our customers to fall in trust with us. So rather than fall in love with us. So I want to just explore that. So what are some key things that you think about or challenge people on to help customers and prospects fall in trust? Because we always talk about we want to be trusted advisors and strategic partners, all that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, when you look under the hit on the lid, the salesperson is there to hit their target because that's what they're pummeled by their sales leader. You're going to close this week, close this next week, right? So what are some things that salespeople and sales leaders, by the way, can think about and consider to help customers fall in trust?
So I talk about this in the concept of shutting up. How will they trust us? You know, is if I shut up and listen more. But that, you know, that leads back to the concept of active listening. And, you know, I run people through, well, how do you show someone you're actively listening, right? How do you let them know? And, you know, particularly in the Zoom world that most of us are in these days, you know, I will tell people, hey, my camera's here, your face is over here. And if you see me typing down below, I'm taking notes. They probably know I'm taking notes, but we all sort of wonder if someone's paying attention. We all do. So I just lay it on the line, right? I let them know those things. And then those notes are summarizing, like, what's how do you show someone you're listening? You summarize. Well, if I heard you correctly, blah, blah, blah. Well, if I send this in an email afterwards, that's going to happen too, right? So now they're starting to trust that there's this process, this journey that Richard's taking them on that provides them with a better experience. So that's one thing is active listening. You know, and you know, I say this all the time. Do you know the song Billy Joel's Piano Man?
Yes.
So, you know, who at the bar is a friend of his? Do you know, Darren? Do you remember?
Oh, that's a hard question. No.
Yeah, it John that but and this is the
Johnny?
point. John at the bar is a friend of mine.
John.
Gets me my drinks for free, right? And so I run this as an exercise, because here's a song we if it comes on the radio, we'll know it. We'll know every word. But in the moment like this, you may not remember them all. So imagine going into a sales conversation where you don't know the lyrics. So you've got to be more intentional with how you listen and with respect to that. So that's the first thing. And then the other thing is, you know, again, what's the real value of open-ended questions? Not that you don't get a yes/no answer, it's that we shut up. We stop talking. So we go through those kinds of things. And there is value to closed-ended questions. There's absolute value there. So that's the stuff that I talk about. And those are the little things that I think help people fall in trust with you. I've never lost business. I can't think that I have. That's not true. I think I lost business once because I thought I sent an email, calendar invite, and I was sitting there on the day of, and I'm like, why aren't I supposed to talk to him today? Like, he was going to call. And sure enough, I went and I'm like, ugh, I forgot to send the calendar invite. And I emailed him and I said, I am so sorry. I clearly missed. And if, I'd still love to talk to you, but if you've made another decision, I understand. And he said, yeah, we went in a different direction. We didn't hear from you, which means he didn't trust me. It didn't mean he thinks I'm a bad human. He's just like, oh, well, if Richard's going to drop the ball on that, I can't trust him to get the job done. So,
Well, potentially, yeah.
yeah. So, and on occasion that stuff happens and someone still gets it. Like he wasn't rude and I wasn't rude. It was just like, that was my mistake. I own it.
It's interesting you talk about that because there are a lot of people out there who believe that salespeople have to have the gift of the gab. They're really good at that talking. You've got to be able to talk underwater with a mouthful of marbles, especially in Costa Rica with a beautiful
I've
army.
never heard that one, but I like it. So, trying to get this sun out of my face, but go ahead. Yeah.
But it's interesting that good salespeople are the ones that spend 80% of the time asking questions. Oh, sorry, 20% of the time asking questions and 80% of the time listening. So,
The ratio from Gong last I saw was 60-40. The best salespeople speak 60%, listen 40%, but that fluctuates. Even still, though, your point is right, and the what's the word? The stereotype of a salesperson is aggressive, former athlete, go-getter, blah blah blah. And we've forgotten that some of the best salespeople are the introverts.
Yes.
The one, because they're actually natural at asking a question and then sitting back and not feeling impatient that they have to talk, right? My favorite people to ever hire, I don't care what sales role it is teachers.
Okay.
Because what have they been doing all day long for 8 hours with fifth graders, right, who are 10 years old? They're selling and they're having to explain it in a way that a mind can easily interpret what they're trying to do, right? And so they tend to, when they enjoy the idea of making money and they like the idea of selling, they're the best ones ever. They really are. I've recruited so many teachers. I'm like, anybody know a teacher is looking for, a career change? I'll talk to them, and you'd be surprised. It's crazy.
Well, I'm it doesn't it actually doesn't surprise me at all because I know a lot of teachers who've made that transition. I also know a lot of teachers who have ended up being leaders in organizations and coaches in organizations, whether it be sporting teams or not. But because they've got that teaching background, they've got an underlying really strong foundation on how to effectively communicate with different people. They know different learning styles, and that increases the opportunity to sell and fall in trust with them, but also a level of credibility that comes with that and to be able to
I mean,
influence.
imagine you gotta give someone a demo. Teachers demo all day long. And to your point, their buyers learn differently, want to hear differently. And the teacher, by the time they're a teacher, it's almost innate in their capability to recognize it long before any of us can as salespeople. So that's, that's why I really love the teaching profession. And on the flip side of that, it's also disappointing that, at least here in the States, that teachers can't make more money and that they have to choose to leave, because that's a challenge as well. So
Yeah, they're not as
not
well paid
respected
as
enough.
perhaps they, yeah, not as well paid as they probably should be for the work that they do, but also just think about they literally have the future of a town, a state, a country in their hands, right? And they are probably one of the most influential people. And unfortunately, there are parents who send their kids to school expecting the teachers to teach their kids all the values that they should be taught at home. So there's added pressure there. So yes, they're always doing the selling. So one of the I guess the methods in your book you talk about is the neat selling. Now, you mentioned before neat challenger methodology, BANT, spin selling, stuff like that. For the listeners, just take us through the key elements of neat.
It's fairly simple. It's not meant to replace anything. It can, but it doesn't have to. I'm not a fan of ripping and replacing Medic just because you like neat. It can bolt on nicely, so I just want to make sure people understand I'm not a rip and replace guy. But the N stands for need. What is the need? The E stands for the economic impact of that need. What is that present economic impact that they're experiencing based on the challenges they're having? Right. A is about access to authority because you're never going to get to authority. And T is still timeline, right? So it's NEAT. And when I created it, I originally was going to call it Nate Selling, and I was going to have this little character named Nate. And then I realized I could rearrange it and it spells neat, and I could make it like a compass, right? So it has NEANT. And the reason I chose the compass was that you don't have to follow a particular order. I don't care if you start with need or economic impact or access to, I don't care. Depends on the experience the buyer wants, right? They could come in and say, look, you know, if you sell security, we just had a data breach and it's costing us that. Well, all of a sudden you're talking about economic impact as much as you're talking about need, right? So it's meant to be a compass to be to help you figure your way through things. So, but that's need, economic impact, access to authority, and timeline.
And in your experience in the teams that you're working with, how many sales teams, maybe individuals, miss one of those?
All of them.
Sorry, this wasn't meant to be a loaded question, but I knew the answer
No,
to that.
but look, let's be honest, Aaron, we miss it too. You and I do this on day in and day out, and there's always something like, oh, I could have asked that, or ooh, I meant to ask that, or I forgot to ask it. So it's not meant to be a criticism of anyone. It's a question of like, how do we all just get better? Right. You know, and again, I think I'm like you. By the time they come to us or we find them, the timing's right because they are missing all these things, whether it's Medic or Bant or Gap or Neat or whatever. Like they've had some experience that says we need to go on this journey.
And that's the other thing. There's so much information available now that customers are already going to do the research. They'll stalk you on LinkedIn.
Oh,
They'll
good
look at
Lord.
your website, whatever the case might be.
Yeah, we have. Here's the deal. We've always had, well, I won't say always, since the internet came along, we've always had as much information about them as they do about us. Maybe not in 99 or 2000. That being said, in the last 20, 15 years, we've certainly had as much information. So I hate hearing people say, well, they got more information about you than you do about, I'm like, no. And now, 2024, we have way more information about them. I can go run a personality test on Darren, or you could run one on me, and it'll tell me when you talk to Richard, you need to be bullet point oriented, get to the point fast. He likes to make decisions quickly. Here's how you actually phrase the question. Like, so this whole concept that we don't have enough information is, it's just not true in my opinion anymore.
But it still doesn't remove, I guess, the need to be fundamental and ask these questions. Is there a definitive problem? Because I say to sales teams all the time, you might have the best product and the best service in the marketplace, but if your customer doesn't have a problem they need to solve or they want to solve and they can't quantify any impact if they don't solve it, then stop trying to flog on the product because it's like flogging that dead horse. They're never going to do it. So move on.
They have to, similar to you, and tell me how you see this. Or how you might phrase it is that they have to hear themselves say it out loud, not hear it from me. Right? I don't need to walk in and say, oh, so you want to talk to me because you missed your target last year. Okay, well, here's the solution. No, it's like, oh, I'm really sorry you missed the target. How much did you miss it by? How many reps missed it? They need to hear themselves say it out loud. They're convincing themselves.
That's
And
it.
the, you know, again, like, you understand relationships. You're about the same age as me, maybe a few years younger. How often do our significant others just say, I just want to be heard, don't solve the problem? And that's the part, right? Your partner, that's a big thing for partners is that yes, they do want our help sometimes, and sometimes we need to solve the problem. And of course, typical men try to solve all the problems. But in reality, sometimes they just want to be heard. And your customer wants to be heard. And when they feel heard, that's when they start to fall in trust with you.
That's it. And if you've got a good relationship, and I sometimes do this with my wife, and I do this with coaching clients as well, sometimes I'll just ask the question, so what role do you want me to play in this conversation?
Yes.
Are you looking for an answer, or you just want to your soundboard? Just let me, I'll play that role.
Believe
right?
me, that's what I'm like, are you venting? Or
That's
you,
right.
you know, and you just want to vent, or do you want me to try and solve this for you? Because some,
that's it.
But it's interesting because for me, I don't know about you personally, I had to learn to ask that question, because even when I ask that question, my brain is still in solving mode.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, I could solve this right now.
Yes.
You know, and
yes.
I have to learn how to, you know, we say it all the time. Look, I've done a ton of therapies. We have to meet that person in their headspace where they are. And the only way we can do that is by asking questions. And when we ask questions, they actually get out of their own headspace and get out of their way. And for me, that's sort of this, the underbelly of all this stuff. And it's, and when you think about it, it's massively altruistic. You're trying to help someone, right?
Yeah.
You're helping people. They could get raises and promotions and provide for their family. They could get a bigger sales team, which then helps those people. Like, and so this goes back to what we were talking in the beginning of, like, yeah, I'm in sales.
Yeah.
What do? I keep the economy chugging. I give people opportunity to make more money than they ever wanted.
That's
What
it.
do, lawyer?
That's it.
take their money?
Yes.
So.
Yes. And it is altruistic, and it's not something that we should be ashamed of, right? So
not at all.
I'll often say to sales teams, what are you there to do?
Yeah.
Well, you're there to sell. What do you think the customers are there to do? So any customer that you're currently working with, they know that your role is to sell. So put that on the table, right?
You don't need to talk about it to a certain extent. Like, we
yes.
know.
And they know that you have a sales target to hit, right? They also know that if they put some pressure on, such as delaying seeing you or not returning phone calls, there's going to be some implied pressure. So the balance of power will now sit with them, and they might be in a better position to ask for things like discounts. And there is a lot of sales people out there that will say, oh, how do I try to, what will it take you, Mr. Customer, to make a decision today?
Right.
And I'll give you an extra 5% discount, right? Great.
Right.
Playing into the hands of the customer every single time.
Yep.
So
we should expect the discount question. It's so funny. You know, it's kind of like, I ask people all the time, how do you handle the discount question? I'll ask the VP of sales. Well, I do this. I'm like, how does your team do it? I'm like, why haven't you taught them? And most of the time it's because the VP of sales doesn't know how to do it either.
Yeah.
So it's, but we shouldn't, it's like so simple. We shouldn't be shocked. So we should have a play. We should have a script in our playbook that tells us how to navigate this. Same with the competition. You know, how do you get around the competition and not do the, well, we don't have that, but there's a workaround. Like, they don't want to hear about a workaround.
No.
Right. You know, that's not what they're asking about. So.
So what's a key tip then for people listening to this who might be in a sales environment where their customers are very, very price driven? And I think a lot of this is conditioning. They're always looking for, how do I get whatever the price is that the company provides me as a first proposal?
Yeah.
I know there's going to be room. And unfortunately, there are people within an organization that, even though when we get the opportunity to do the BAFO, the best and final offer, they know there's always something more.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's pretty simple. If you have done your research and your product marketing team has done the research, and Darren says, hey, Richard, can I get a discount? I can easily say to Darren, you know, Darren, I appreciate the ask. Everybody asks. It's the way the world works. Our pricing is based on what the market will bear. How would you like to proceed? Because now Darren doesn't have much. He's like, well, you know, so-and-so is cheaper. Okay, well, why are you talking to me about pricing? Because it sounds like you like my service better than theirs, but you just want to match their price. Well, if you want their price, you can go get that service. But you already told me they can't do X, Y, and Z. So, you know, that's one way to do it. Believe me, I can say it that way. And I have said it that way because it's my own business and I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
But my wife might, like, my wife is my CFO and CRO and CEO and VP and SVP of everything. So, and HR, she's also my HR manager. Right. So, that being said, you know, you can find a way to say, Darren, you know, gosh, I appreciate the ask. I get it. Our pricing is based on what the market will bear. So how would you like to proceed? Well, they're not going to hang up on you. And if they do, they were never serious anyway. They were going to
Yeah,
go to
that's
the
it.
lower person anyway. They're just trying to leverage you to go back to, oh, well, so and so said they're going to give me this price. And whatever you give them that matches the competitor, they're going to take it down by 10% to go work that guy. Right.
Course.
So that's the first thing I say. If I feel like I have to give a discount, one, there's nothing wrong with it. Logos help. If you're getting, if it's a big company and you can use that logo, that's good leverage. If I can get so I will go something like this and I'll say, hey, Darren, appreciate it. Here's a way I think we can both leverage commercial terms to our benefit. I can offer you 2% for a longer contract or more seats. I could offer you 3% for a case study, and I can offer you 2% for a customer, just a customer quote. And I can offer you 2% if you prepay the whole thing up front. And you can have all of those if you want. Where would you like? Which now all of a sudden I've managed to keep my discount under 10%, right? Because I already know they're expecting 20% or 30% because they're just,
Ridiculous.
they're unsavvy shoppers because they don't
Totally.
know, right?
Totally.
So anyway, and now the cool thing is when you do 2%, 3%, and you're at the procurement level, procurement only wants 2 or 3%, right? So anyway, so that's how I do it. I first turn it back to them because I'm not going to lowball myself and discount myself. They want a discount, well then they have to ask for it and they have to tell me what they want, right? Hence that question of how would you like to proceed?
It's
Well,
a
I need
great,
to get it here. Yeah, so
no,
just to
it's a great response. And for people listening to this, you're going to have customers are going to try it on because that's just the conditioning that I guess society
yeah.
has. So when you go to a local electrical store and you're going to buy a TV, your natural inclination is going to ask what's the best deal you can give us, right? So it's just
Yeah.
a natural thing. But don't discount. Don't feel as if you have to
Yep.
discount. It's all about the value, and
Yep.
put it back on the customer. Get them to justify what
Yep.
they think it's valuable to
Yeah.
value that.
And this goes back to what I was saying earlier about economic impact. If I know that your current situation is hurting you this much, your option is to stay the course. Okay, fine. Your option is to build it yourself and it's only going to be 60% better. Meanwhile, your team is not, you weren't hired, they weren't hired to build that. So what are they not going to get done
Exactly.
on their to-do list? And how's that going to affect your, so they have options, but if I haven't done my economic impact, what is the cost? What is it hurting? How much is it hurting now? Is it, teaching our teams that our job is to help prospects and customers realize they have a that A, they have a headache, but then show them that they really have a migraine because they don't want to admit it. Who wants to admit that they've got a big problem like that? So
And I think that is the key, because if you're selling anything, it's not about your product, it's not about your service, it is about the problem that you're going to solve. And our role as salespeople is to identify that, but get the customer to understand it, be able to verbalize it if they can, but actually, and do this respectfully, build up the pain to the point where you want them to be feeling, and they may not necessarily verbalize it straight away, but you want them to be feeling that I have to solve this problem. And if I don't, the ramifications are going to be so far outweighing the things that if I experience, if I do solve it. So ramp up the pain.
There you go. Yep. You got to
Awesome.
twist the arm a little bit without being manipulative. By the way, without sounding manipulative. I know that when I come on and talk to people, again, like we want to give information, but we also know to get you to listen for an hour, we got to be a little creative. So please don't take, don't say it exactly as Richard says it. I got it. So.
No, but then it comes back to you need to be you, right? You need to be your authentic. But if you know what you stand for and you believe in what you're trying to do and your intention is pure, right? Then a lot of people are going to be very forgiving, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And look, there's, you and I both know that as we run our own business, we can get away with things that people who actually have a quota and a boss can't get away with, right? We know that. And we can walk away from anything we want, or we can discount if we choose to, because 2023 was a slower year. Well, all right, I'll take 30% off because ain't nothing else in the pipeline this year. So that happens, right? But now that it's back, I don't,
Yeah. No, excellent. So, mate, this has been a phenomenal conversation. I can't believe it's an hour already that's gone.
I know. Holy cow.
It's the book is The Seller's Journey. For people who are wanting to get a hold of it, but also connect with you, where is the best place for them to go?
Yes. So obviously the book's on Amazon in whatever country you're in. But you can also find it at thesellersjourney.co. That'll tell you all the different places you can order it online. It's digital, working on the audiobook. Find me on LinkedIn. I'm Richard Harris. I'm the one with the little goofy trademark because that's me being snarky. And I got to stop saying that word. Yes, to the marketing people, I know you can't trademark a name. I get it. I know. So find me on LinkedIn. That's probably the easiest and fastest. And then I'm crazy, but it's +1 415 596 9149. +1 415 596 9149. That's my legit cell phone number. I know it's my legit cell phone number because my kids never pick up when I call from it because they can see it. But I am on WhatsApp. So I always encourage people to text me real quick to say you heard me on the Exceptional Sales Leader podcast. So I'll pick up the phone.
Awesome.
If you can get on, that's the easiest.
So. Fantastic. Well, I'll put those those details in the show notes and including your phone number. Yeah.
You'd be shocked. Like I did one with a VC GTM fund the other day, and they're like, Richard, there's like 35,000 people who download this podcast. And I'm like, yeah, they won't call. They're like, they will, Richard. They know you. They know who you are. They're going to call. I'm like, no, they won't. Which is kind of why I do it. Like, that's the whole point.
I do the same thing with any workshop I run or any program I run. I give them my mobile number and I say, at any time, just call me. I'm only a text message away.
Yes.
I never call. I never do.
Never. Never, never. Same thing. It's in my, when I give out my materials, I'm like, that's my real cell phone number. You can call me anytime.
It's probably like when you give out your email in the in the first couple of pages of your book. Probably nobody's going to send you an email either.
Yeah. No. I'll have to just try to do something special for the first person who ever asked me for the money back.
Do an interview with them. Get them on your podcast.
That's fair. Yes, I should do that. So
love it. Hey, mate, awesome. It's been a phenomenal conversation. Greatly appreciate it.
Great.
On. We'll have to do it again.
Love it. Love it. One last little thing. If you're interested in going to Costa Rica and surfing, surfandsales.com. Darren says he's going to do a scholarship and give you half. He doesn't know that he was going to do that, but I just said he'll cover half your expense. So,
well, there you go. You just put it out there. Yeah. So maybe we have to go and create something now.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe you need to give out your phone number now. Darren, thank you. Thank you for everybody listening. Thank you for having me on here, Darren. This has been awesome. So fun.
Brilliant. Thanks, Richard. All the best, mate.
You too.
Thank you for listening to the Exceptional Sales Leader podcast. I trust the information in this episode has been helpful in your journey towards becoming exceptional. And remember, please take the time to rate the show, subscribe to the show so other people can find it. But also, if I can help you, jump on my calendar, go to leadwithdarren.com, and let's have a conversation about how I can help you along your journey to being exceptional.